welcome in Doug Gottlieb, All Ball Podcast. Man, we got two really good guests for you. My man Mike O'Donnell is going to join us. He works for CBS Sports, also does some games for ESPN. He's got fabulous insight. We'll get you kind of caught up on the Duke loss, or maybe more importantly, the Stephen F. Austin win. And then Teddy Greenstein's going to join us. Great friend of mine, longtime writer for the Chicago Tribune. You can read his work at chicagosports.com. And good dude. And I want his perspective. He was at the Bulls-Lakers game, being a guy who covered the Bulls back when the Bulls were the Bulls. And just his thoughts on that. I want to give you a couple of quick thoughts. Like, Duke loses. And there's some lessons here. We have lots of college basketball coaches, high school coaches, just hoop people who watch. And I spent some time with Jim Larrañaga. This is like, man, 4 or 5 years ago. And you look, and Miami has had a disproportionate amount of success against Duke as opposed to some of the other elite teams they played and other teams playing against Duke. And so I asked him, like, what's the secret? And he's like, middle ball screen. I was like, well, that's it? He's like, well, look, the way Duke plays, you can't run offense. Especially when you play them at their place, they get away with just being physical and moving you all over the place. And look, if you want to beat them, you can't run offense. What you want to do, though, is they usually have, you know, a Jahlil Okafor, a Zubac. I mean, you pick the big guy they've had. They've had a lot of talented guys playing center. Oftentimes big, sometimes big white stiff, sometimes the big white athlete, big athlete who's an NBA player, doesn't matter. But what we want is we want to engage that guy in 100 ball screens. If we can do that, we can wear him down, we can get him into foul trouble, and we don't have to run offense. We just have to get our best downhill player, best ball screen player, and attack on those middle ball screens because they don't want to help. They want to get steals, and they want to get out and get dunks. That's how they play. Did you watch what Stephen F. Austin did yesterday? They got their best player in middle ball screens. I'm sorry. This is, by the time of this recording, that will be 2 nights removed, right? Or 2 days essentially removed. But sometimes there's one, you can't play to, you know, it helped that for Stephen F. Austin defensively climbing into him, that is their style. They didn't have to change who they were. But offensively, and this is kind of their style, they just played middle ball screen, middle ball screen, middle ball screen, middle ball screen with our best player and play off of that. And it was enough. So I think that's one, fascinating. Two, it's a Jim Larrañaga idea. And I know Kyle Keller didn't call Jim Larrañaga. And three, when you're looking for teams that can beat Duke, the teams that have to run offense to generate offense, they ain't going to be the Devils. Not going to happen. I also think that there's something else fascinating that's happened that game, and it revolves around Nathan Bain, and it also relates to Anthony Edwards. Let me get to both of them here. We'll start with Bain, then we'll go to Edwards. So Nathan Bain made the game-winning layup for Stephen F. Austin against Duke. And look, I know the coach Stephen F. Austin, Kyle Keller, he's a good friend of mine. I didn't know that, you know, where he's from in the Bahamas, they had a terrible hurricane, and his parents' house, their church, their school was all wiped out, and there was a GoFundMe page. Didn't know. Since the win, the GoFundMe page at the time of this recording has gone from like a couple thousand dollars, I think $2,000, to like $60,000, $70,000 donated. Then I watched Anthony Edwards, who, any of us who know basketball, like I did this, there's a camp, the Pengos camp. Dino Strigonis runs it. It's at Cerritos College. And I coached, although they don't let you coach as much as I want to coach, but you coached in the Pangos camp. And I had Johnny Juzang, who, of course, and I had some of these other guys that are currently playing in college basketball as freshmen. And Johnny Juzang turned around and got dunked on by a dude. I was like, who is that monster guard? 6'5", 210. And they're like, that's Anthony Edwards. And at the time, he was a rising sophomore, going to be a junior. And I was like, that's a monster. Of course, he ended up going to college a year early. He's going to be a top 5 pick. And you watch him and you start to figure like, oh, well, that's what all the hype is about if you haven't paid attention to high school basketball recruiting or any of these draft boards. But my point has always been with this podcast is what college basketball does for you in terms of your profile. If we eliminate even the education, which I don't know why we do. I thought that was what the whole fight was over, you know, and we eliminate just getting into school, which so many of us would never have been able to get into these schools, especially now when it's hyper, hyper competitive. And we just look at the basketball side to it. Forget the training, forget the coaching, and just look at the promotion. Think of Anthony Edwards. Had you heard of him? Had you seen him play before he went off for 34 in the second half against Michigan State? Of course you hadn't. But this is what we do. Now, every shot that he made in Maui will be built as part of his highlight going forward. It'll make you want to watch headed forward. And I think that's fabulous. But I also think that's part of what makes college basketball special, part of what we have to make sure we understand and appreciate in terms of TV. Like, it's a nonstop promotion of these players, which helps them benefit financially. And anybody who says otherwise, I'll just call you a liar. Like, you hadn't heard of many of these guys, if any of those guys. Heck, have you seen Dayton play? Have you? If you have, you know, did you know who Obi Toppin was? 24-8 when they beat Virginia Tech? Had you really ever heard of him? Okay, fine. If you watched the A-10, maybe you had heard the name. Did you know he was such a monster that he could score inside and out, block shots, and looks like a first-round draft pick? No, and I don't know if he'll end up being as good as he's played. I think the answer is yes, but I don't know. But playing in the Maui Invitational is great promotion for his brand. Again, that's what college basketball does. So we can sit here and say the value is in the name and the likeness and they should be getting paid for it. My point has always been like, hey, whatever name and likeness value you have, it's grown exponentially by playing with the uniform of somebody we respect on TV that we're watching. Just take a look at Obi Toppin. Take a look at Anthony Edwards. Or take a look at Nathan Bain's GoFundMe page and how much money has been raised simply because they won one game on the road against Duke. People found out about it, found out about the GoFundMe page. Some people want to pay him back if you're an NC State or a Carolina or a Wake Forest fan. Whatever the logic is, the fact is that college basketball makes stars. All right, let's get to the NBA. Everyone's talking about Luka, and at the time of this recording, on a Tuesday night, Luka kind of got embarrassed at the hands of the Clippers. Now, look, it's an important thing to recognize. I think Luka Doncic is going to be fine. He's going to be a hell of a player. He had a tough night against guys that are as tall, as long or longer, and more athletic, and they got after him. I mean, that's, you know, when you're the Clippers, you got to find reasons to motivate you, and they clearly found a reason that they were motivated. But it also brings up that there's like two different NBAs. Right? There's NBA games that matter, and then there's every other NBA game. And I think it's fascinating to watch. We see this at the end of every season, right? Where there's a guy who goes out and puts up huge numbers, but he's playing against G League players or young guys, and teams are trying to tank, and it's hard to determine how good somebody really is because their numbers are outstanding, but the level of competition at a certain time of year against a certain team isn't that good. Some games don't have the same buzz. I would still have LeBron James as my MVP. And look, this is a guy, me, who said LeBron isn't the best player on his own team. Ask LeBron, but I think he's playing once again like the best player on his own team. Yes, he lets Anthony Davis go get his. Yes, Anthony Davis defends the rim, and Anthony Davis is more in his prime. But LeBron quarterbacks that defense. They have the best record in the NBA, and there isn't a game. There are games in which athletically, he doesn't have the step or the power that he used to have, but there's so much else to his game, and he is still so strong and athletic. Luka's just not there yet. Just not there yet. So I wouldn't have put him even before last night's game as the MVP, but I don't think it's crazy to think Luka Doncic is a top 10 player. You put him alongside, you know, James Harden, Giannis, obviously, if Steph Curry is healthy, Steph Curry is a top 10 player, but he's not, so we won't put him in that list. Kawhi Leonard's right there as a top 5 player. When you start to go through these guys, like, man, they're super duper Kyrie Irving talented. I think that as much as we love Trae Young, and Trae Young is better than anyone could have guessed, it's also fair to say that Trae Young, because of his lack of size and some of its defensive intangibles and energy. He's got a jump shot. He can really pass. Offensively, he can be amazing. But he at times can be a zero-sum player because that's the guy you go after. I do think he has a chance to be Steph Curry light. I'm not sure he'll ever be Steph Curry. I mean, to be a two-time MVP, probably not. Luka, on the other hand, could be this era's Larry Bird. This era's Larry Bird. And I know that Larry played more in the post, but the size, kind of a weird body, not a great athlete for the NBA, but gets open, gets shots, has all the tricks in the bag, can really pass, clever, fearless. That's Luka Doncic.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome him in. Mike O'Donnell joins us on the All Ball podcast. Mike, let me start with last night. What's your reaction to Duke getting beaten at home by Stephen F. Austin?
Year of parody in college basketball. Loved it. And, you know, my favorite thing about it is actually everybody saying that this is just a terrible upset by Duke. Stephen F. Austin leads the country in three in forced turnovers per game. And I thought it's interesting. I kind of harken back to that Evansville-Kentucky game. Usually when you see Cinderella's beat the Power 5 opponents, it's done at the three-point line getting hot. Both Evansville and Stephen F. Austin, it was a little bit of backyard one-on-one. I'm going to beat you in the driveway to the rim. With everything, it's just off the dribble points in the paint. It's kind of the odd way to beat the powerhouse, but I loved it. Stephen F. Austin is way better than I think people think. They just don't recognize the name. Pretty cool night in college basketball as far as I'm concerned.
I think people recognize the name from the NCAA tournament run a couple years ago, and many of these are players, though, you know, obviously Kyle Keller, a different head coach, have been recruited on the backs of that name. But I also think that it points to two things with Duke. One, if you can play through their pressure and get to the rim, Miami – this is always their game plan when they play Duke. You know, put their big guy in a million ball screens and attack. Just spread him out and play. And yeah, you can't run plays against them. That doesn't work. And the second thing is they only have one true ball handler. You know, That's it. So
well, that, and a lot of times when you look at a team like Duke and Kentucky, there it's all about, right, you're used to those teams applying the pressure. When you get punched back in the face, sometimes pressure, it's not a welcome thing from a team who presses a lot. And I think a team like Stephen F. Austin, just it was a little bit of punch back in the mouth. And just the defense for Stephen F. Austin was really good, but the turnovers for Duke were half of those were just totally inexcusable.
The other part of Duke is they only have one true ball handler, right? That's it. They got one true ball handler. And you know, I think that got exposed when Trey Jones turns the ball over a bunch.
That's right. And also when you recruit for one and done and your point guard leaves, your playmaker leaves, you know, I'm not just talking specifically for Duke, but if you don't reload at the point guard position, if the point guard goes somewhere else that he's only going to be a one and done guy, that's what you're going to have. And really, again, this Duke team is very susceptible to pressure and they will turn the ball over. And if you can expose that, if you can honestly hone in on taking away every single possession, like each possession, you're like, we can have an opportunity to force a turnover. I think you'll get, a great result. I could see Virginia beating this Duke team by 20 this season. I don't know how Duke is going to be able to score against Virginia come conference play. That's going to be a fascinating game.
When we look at these freshmen, which one do you like the best?
Oh man, that's a great question. I'm kind of going back to, I don't know if I've seen a score like Anthony Edwards, and I know that that's new and it's fresh, and he just destroyed that second half. And I think a lot of times we look back and we say, well, it's just because that's what he's done lately. He didn't have, you know, his first couple of games weren't great, but the shots he was making, and I get that players get hot, but the difference between good college players and pro players is the ability to make contested jump shots. And when I watch Anthony Edwards' game, I don't see a lot of players that can efficiently score and make contested jump shots, because that's what the NBA is all about. And so I'm a big fan of Edwards. I think probably James Wiseman is a close second there. It's probably going to be a coin flip between one of those two players.
More so than Cole Anthony.
Yeah, I think, because Edwards doesn't have as much help as Cole Anthony does. I'm not saying that North Carolina is loaded. But I think Edwards has to make shots all by himself when he's going to face probably more double teams, more in-gap defense than maybe Cole Anthony would, just because there's better wing players, there's better post players for North Carolina. Cole Anthony's probably at worst going to be the third or fourth pick in the draft. But after that performance last night and the fact that Georgia just doesn't have, they don't have the horses that North Carolina does. I think people forget about that. If you can make contested shots and you're the only one doing it, that's a big deal. I just think Cole Anthony has more help. That's why I think it's more looks.
Am I crazy to think that Louisville's the best team?
No, they're really good. You're not crazy to think that Louisville's the best team, because I don't think anybody has a clue who the best team is. If you're asking me who the best overall college basketball team is right now, it's Virginia. I just don't see... Everybody hates watching them play because the games are in the 40s and 50s, you know, if that. But I don't know if there's a team, because there's not this just great offensive firepower. There's not this one player that's just absolutely destroying people consistently. I don't know if there's a team in the country that can beat Virginia the way they're playing half-court defense. It's remarkable. I would say Louisville and Virginia are my two favorite teams in college basketball in terms of just being far and above everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, look, and we haven't even seen all of, you know, all of what Louisville has to offer. I mean, that's maybe the most impressive part, is as good as they look now, they're going to get, you know, they're going to get even better, you know, really, really soon, as you know, they work in two kind of ridiculous talents, David Johnson and Malik Williams. Like, Malik Williams is their best defender. David Johnson, who's just now playing, is a pro. They're going to be really, really good. You and I get a chance to cover Conference USA basketball, other smaller conferences. We mentioned Stephen F. Austin. Conference USA, let's start specifically there this year. The best team is who?
Oh, man, right now, I still it's Western Kentucky, you know. I actually have their game next weekend for CBS Sports. They play Arkansas at their place. It's going to be an awesome test for both teams. I think Western Kentucky is the best team in Conference USA. I think Charles Bassey is probably the best overall player in Conference USA. He's the best NBA prospect. My favorite thing about Western Kentucky is they have a lot of new role players on their team, but their defense is stout. It's strong. It's, you can't get anything around the rim. You're going to make contested three-point shots. And the defense of Western Kentucky, really for the first time, we've kind of always thought they were the most talented team. But for the first time, I can say that they have an identity, and that identity is defense. And it's very tough for them to get shots, for opponents to get shots off, especially around the rim, because Bassey is having the year this year that I think we thought he was going to have last year.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to take UTEP. And, you know, Bryson Williams, who's the transfer from Fresno State. Jordan Lathan, who was going to go to Northwestern, now ends up, you know, he's his second year there. You know, I think Darryl Edwards is a good player as well. He's a grad transfer. He played Northwest Florida State, which is a really good junior college program. Another Fresno guy. So, I'm going to go UTEP. Kind of remarkable how quickly they've turned that thing around.
There's no doubt. I played in Conference USA. I played at UCF, and it seems as if UTEP was that program that they have a year, and you're like, is this the year that they turn and become, you know, a legitimate contender and add those kind of mid-major rankings? And the way that they're playing this year, really good. Now, you've got to give, I kind of hate saying this phrase, and I'm sorry, but you got to give a ton of credit to that staff, because what you just said, alluding to Conference USA, could be the conference that you can have a great mid-major team if you build through transfers. And I think what you said earlier is a really good point. if you can build through transfers in Conference USA, that's a league eventually that could become every other year they could have two bids in the league. I actually think that FIU is going to end up being that program, that next program that's going to take the big jump in Conference USA. That's one of the fastest teams in the country. FIU, FAU, the two Florida schools in Conference USA are going to do some damage here, I think, in the future.
No question. All right, is there anyone else that we haven't discussed? Anyone else a smaller conference school that we should watch out for?
Oh, man, College Charleston. I just did their game versus UCF, and I think I'm getting yelled at for being a Grant Riller homer. Don't really care. I think he, outside of Marcus Howard, outside of Cole Anthony, he's the best scorer in college basketball. He regularly faces double teams. One of the reasons why he doesn't necessarily get a lot of credit, I think, is because he's a senior. He's actually a redshirt senior. He beat out Antonio Blakely in high school for Central Florida Player of the Year and was a two-star recruit. And his best offer was Charleston, coming out of high school, averaged 29 points a game. I haven't seen a player be that efficient in the half court. Doug, if you haven't seen him play and you just got a hankering to watch some College of Charleston hoops, I'm telling you, you're in for a treat. He's over 20 points a game. He plays at three levels, right? It's most guys are either three-pointers or layups. He has the mid-range game. Big player comp for him is C.J. McCollum. I think the way he utilizes ball screens, he comes out down screens. One of the smartest scorers I've seen in college hoops. And I think Charleston, and they were up on Oklahoma State at home before Oklahoma State made a quick little run. That's a team that I would hate. If they're a 13-14 seed in the tournament after they win the Colonial, I would be nervous as all get out having to prep for Riller and College Charleston, because he is the guy that can go for 30 any given night.
Yeah, no, I saw that game as well. I was a little alarmed by their collapse against Oklahoma State, but haven't seen him. CJ McCollum, do you think he's a top 15 pick?
I don't think he will go in the top 15, but I think he's a top 15 player in college basketball. I do see Grant Riller going late in the first round. I think what hurt him the most, actually, is that he didn't test the NBA waters over the summer last season. I asked him about that. I asked their SID. I asked their coach, Earl Clark, who's a fantastic coach. And they said he's so committed to College of Charleston and getting back to the NCAA tournament that he didn't want any distractions during the summer. I mean, he was an NBA prospect last season, and last year's draft was loaded, and I get it. But this is like this. He's a rare, really quiet, humble kid that I don't think we've seen very often, to where he cares about College of Charleston just as much about getting his points up. Kind of a rare thing in college hoops. And I think that hurt him as not getting tested, kind of getting an idea. But late first round, Doug, I'm telling you, that'll be the steal of the draft, is Grant Riller of College of Charleston.
Awesome stuff. All right, last thing, the high major team that's not getting enough love.
Oh, man, I don't think we're talking about Auburn enough in the SEC. I don't think anybody thought they were going to be this good. And the way that they're competing on the defensive end is kind of – we take a step back and we look at it, and you lose all those pieces from that awesome run last season. And they say there's no way Coach Pearl can pull it off. There's no way with all the controversy around the program that they're going to be able to avoid distractions. And Auburn is going to be a legit factor in the SEC, because Florida is overrated. Kentucky is still really good. Tennessee is always good under Rick Barnes, but I think Auburn might be the second or third best team in the SEC. They're playing that well. SEC is kind of a weird conference, because just as much as I'm saying about Auburn, I could say the same thing about Arkansas. Is Musselman inherited a team that had a few pieces, Isaiah Joe, who's actually one of the best three-point shooters in the country, but Arkansas, their defense is legit. So I think they're the best defensive team in the SEC from a half-court standpoint. But I think Auburn, the way that they score, their offense is smooth, and they run and run and run and just completely kind of demoralize you from their conditioning and effort standpoint. I think we're not talking about Auburn enough.
Yeah, I mean, they thoroughly embarrassed New Mexico. They beat a really good and previously undefeated Richmond squad. I still think, you know, look, we'll see step up in level of competition once they get into conference play, right? Like St. Louis is decent. NC State is decent, but we don't see them go against anybody legit until Florida on the road in January. And I think it's because Bruce knew he was going to have to retool things. But with all these veterans to go along with the freshmen, you know, he may be, you know, and Isaac Okoro is going to come along, like he continues to take leaps and bounds. I think they got a chance to be pretty damn good. I don't know if they're as good as their record because of the level of competition and some of those seniors are ahead of the curve, but I think they're really good.
But there's something to be said, Doug, and you know this from a scheduling standpoint. You know, that's a smart move by Bruce Pearl. I mean, there are pieces there that team can be really good. But you know how important confidence is in college hoops. That's why it's different than college football. You get a team in a rhythm, and you get confidence playing. You lead that into conference play. I don't care if it's cliche. It matters if you're playing efficiently and you're having fun. And that's a big deal leading into, especially, the grind of the SEC.
Mike, thanks so much for your time, and look forward to seeing you during that game, and thanks for being our guest.
Happy to help. Appreciate it, Doug. Thank you.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, let's welcome him in from the Chicago Tribune. Teddy Greenstein joins us. And Teddy, you went to the Lakers-Bulls game. You've worked – how long have you worked for the paper? It's like 20 years now, right?
Well, we mark my Tribune beginning from the time I called you. Seriously, man, you were one of my first stories.
That's
so 1996.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Oh man, 23 years. So again, and if you, here's what I remember about that year was while I was at Notre Dame, the Bulls actually played an exhibition game at the Joyce Center, right? I remember that.
I wasn't there, but I believe
against
you.
Against the Sonics. So here's my question: what was it like? Like what? I know what a Laker experience is like in L.A. as people are, there's a little bit of a renaissance here, and then there's the, oh, my gosh, maybe I like the Clippers better. What was it like to be in the house that Jordan built when LeBron comes in wearing 23 with his third team?
Well, first I'm tempted to ask you who you had in that Bulls-Sonics scrimmage. You know, I think the Bulls were favored by 14.5,
yeah.
So that was, you know, that was a memory. It was amazing, I just got to say, like, one of the cool things about covering Bulls games is they have the media on the end line, like in a lot of places where, you know, up in the 200, 300, 500 level or whatever. But in this case, we're down on the floor. And, yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing to be 20 feet from, you know, both LeBron and Anthony Davis when that show comes to town. Now, the Bulls obviously had their way early, and it was like, wow, is this going to be the game that flips their season? And then L.A. just shut it down with 16-point run there to start the fourth quarter, and it was back to the kind of LOL Bulls, which is how they've been this year. But, yeah, there was a lot of sizzle in that arena, and you do feel honored in a lot of ways when you're seeing LeBron live.
Yeah, and any idea, Anthony Davis had some weird comments about wanting to play in Chicago, being a free agent. Was that just being nice?
Yeah, you know, he went to an event the day before that game, Doug, and he was speaking to, I think, maybe some school kids, and one of them asked him, and
what's he supposed to say when a school kid says, like, do you want to come back home and play? Like, no, kid, I don't like your town. It's too cold.
Exactly.
Your team stinks.
Yeah.
I'm playing for the Lakers now.
Exactly. I think he was just being a nice guy and just kind of nodding along and saying, oh, yeah, we all love coming home. So the next day we're at the shoot around, and the first question to Anthony is, oh, yesterday you said you'd be open to coming back here. And his response was like, no, I didn't. So I think we know. I think we know from seeing the recent past, not a lot of guys want to play for the Bulls. It's been struggling. It's been troubling, and it's been a problem. Like, you think they all want to come back and see if they can try to relive the glory days, that, you know, the Pippen, Horace Grant, Jordan glory days, and not a lot of guys want to do it, which is why they were stuck with, you know, signing Carlos Boozer a bunch of years ago instead of a bigger name. So, no, I don't think we'll be seeing Anthony Davis back home.
Yeah, you know, what's fascinating about it is that they those guys weren't alive, right? I mean, like, some of those guys weren't alive during at least the first run, if not the second run of the Bulls.
Yeah, so there's that, and I just think that people feel like there's dysfunction in the Bulls front office, and, you know, they have Fred Hoiberg, they really don't even give him a shot because he coaches a bunch of teams that are either not space and pace type teams or that have injuries. And then all of a sudden the team is getting healthy last year and they fire him. So they bring in Jim Boylan. Jim Boylan immediately, you know, starts going to these sort of old school methods in practice. They're joking about, you know, calisthenics and push-ups and sit-ups and all that kind of stuff. And there's a team rebellion in the first 48 hours. So I think free agents are just kind of like, eh, I don't want to be a part of that.
Last thing, Zach LaVine. He obviously has a world of talent.
Yes.
Can they win because of that talent?
I mean, I like Zach. He's had a lot of bad games this year. He also obviously had the ridiculous game in Charlotte the other day where he hit, I think, three threes in the final 40-something seconds. He's got the talent. He's got the offensive ability. You know, the thing with him is he's just tagged as a poor defensive player. It's not so much on-the-ball defense. It's more just off-the-ball defense where he kind of falls asleep and sometimes lets his guys just, you know, cut to the hoop. So I'd like to think they can win with Zach. He is a great personality. He'd be really good for Chicago as a star or a superstar. Obviously, he'd love to be an all-star this year with the game being in Chicago, the all-star game. But it just hasn't happened yet. He's a second-tier guy and needs to do some things to become a better overall player.
Awesome stuff, Teddy. Thanks for the perspective and joining us. Last thing, are you allowed to vote LeBron if I go Jordan and LeBron?
I mean, if I want to survive the weekend, I don't think I am. But I guess my thought is maybe LeBron's a slightly better individual player, but I'm still going, I'm still going big picture MJ, man. I think he did it in an era when it was so much harder to score. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Fair enough. Well, you write stories, and they're all true too. They're not fiction.
Teddy, Most of them.
Thanks for joining us. Get back to covering that incredible Northwestern football team, and even better enigmatic Northwestern basketball team. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Sounds great, Dougie. Be well, buddy.
This is from Brian at Wrigley Hawk, who should be number one in men's hoops. My answer is Louisville. Here's why. If you haven't been paying attention, David Johnson and Malik Williams. David Johnson's barely played. Malik Williams is going to play. Malik Williams is their best defender. David Johnson's going to be a pro. And I think Louisville is good, and they're going to get better. One of the things you'll hear this year in college basketball is there's no dominant team. I think the translation to that is Duke's not dominant. Carolina's not dominant. Right? Michigan State's not dominant. Kentucky's not dominant. Kansas is not dominant. But I think that Louisville, remember, number one recruiting class in the country going back to last year. You also bring back two or three of your best players from last season. Wara, I love Stephen Enoch. You add in Fresh Kimball. And then eventually you have David Johnson, Malik Williams playing at minimum 20 minutes a game each. Louisville, that's why they've been my number one team so far this season. All right, this question, again, you can ask any of these questions at Gottlieb Show. What are your thoughts on LaMelo Ball as a prospect? All right, here's the deal with LaMelo. I think his dad hurts him. He won't be the number one overall pick, no matter how good he is. And he's playing really well in Australia. No matter how good he is, we're not blind to this, that his dad really hurt Lonzo's relationships with the LA Lakers. He just did. He wouldn't shut up. They kept telling him to shut up. Now, his dad has been completely out of the spotlight this year, and there's a reason to it because he's gotten the feedback of, hey, nobody wants to deal with you. You're going to hurt your kid. And he smartly stepped aside. And by the way, send him to play in Australia. Great, because they're coaching him, and he's a magician off the ball screen. He plays with great ease and great pace. And there's going to be questions about whether or not he will play defense. He's obviously much, much longer and appears to shoot the ball better than his brother, doesn't have the pronounced hitch in his shot. Like, I think LaMelo Ball is going to be a top five pick. I don't think he'll be the number one pick, and people who are avoiding the elephant in the room, which is his dad's a pain in the ass, people don't want to deal with him. The last thing you want to do is have a top prospect you draft, and you're trying to work with him, and the dad gets in on the commentary. They don't want to deal with it. So it's going to have to be the right organization, but I do think that the talent is hard to deny. I would also say that part of our infatuation with him is the fact that he's, up until really this week, he's been the only top prospect playing that we can see. Now that you see Cole Anthony and Anthony Edwards and James Wiseman and some of the others, you start to go like, oh, that's the group that will produce the number one overall pick. But the dad hurts him. I don't think anybody thinks otherwise. Even if 6'7" point guard can handle it, can pass it, can shoot it, can he guard? And what happens when people get into him? You really don't see, but he is playing against grown men and doing well in Australia. Hey, quick programming note. Make sure you check out the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern Time or noon to 3 Pacific. You can download it. Simply go to foxsportsradio.com or click on the iHeartRadio app and you can listen to it daily. We have so much college hoops. We'll try and continue to update you on things. Next week, we'll have a more clear picture. Thanks so much for listening. My thanks to both of my guests for joining. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Make sure you share this podcast with a buddy. Sometimes we do long form interviews. Sometimes we just get you updated on things that you might find interesting, like college hoops or NBA hoops or different storylines. In the meantime, remember to download, subscribe, rate. If you rate us, somehow I get paid more money. That's a good thing. And listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show on your iHeartRadio app or SiriusXM 217 or 203. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball.